From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about those tiny little things we add to words that can sometimes totally change their meaning. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do every week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey guys, some beginnings and some endings and some things in between on today's episode. How you like that? Was that good?
Ooh,
we're probably starting off with a listener email though, right?
Yes.
Yes. Carrie from New Orleans.
Hi, Carrie.
Said, just amusing. This was actually very interesting.
We had a long discussion.
Fun chatting about this. Just amusing. At my age, 63, I don't mind being called an older woman. But if someone calls me an old woman, I'd be a little torqued.
Oh,
I like
funny.
The term torqued, yeah. Also, Carrie.
That was good too. I like that too.
But older is older than old. No? What's going on here? I must say, I love her.
Yeah, this is really interesting. We had a little discussion about it. We couldn't find much on it except for our own opinions. And I think obviously older is a comparative.
Mm-hmm.
Versus old.
Right.
So older can be, you can be an older toddler and it doesn't have that age, you know, he's the older one of our two, you know, two kids. So older, I think, because it's a comparative, doesn't automatically say, hey, you're over the hill. It says like, you're older. And so I think that's probably why I completely agree with her. I think older sounds fine.
It sounds more distinguished, right?
Yeah. Which gets to the next thing, too. And Kath and I both have opinions, of course, on that, too. Elder.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And Kath, what do you weigh in on our opinion on that one?
I don't like elder.
Neither do I.
No, you mean elder as an adjective, not like
correct.
Not like an
elderly too, though. I don't like elderly.
Right. But we're
but
not
no,
talking
he's saying
about
not
like,
as a noun, like Kathy, a wise elder of the tribe,
right? A tribal elder or the LDS church. I think they
No, we're talking elderly, elder, like an elder woman. I don't like elder to begin with.
No, I don't
like old and older more than elder and
I don't either. Elder has like that. But what Fletcher just said, elder does have that elder of the church. It has a very formal feel to me. It doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily that the case in terms of language. But for me, it definitely has I'm an elder of the church. I'm an older person is what I would say, you know?
We don't really even talk about like the eldest child anymore, do we?
No, I would say oldest.
Well, yeah. One thing that was interesting, we found that a lot of sources actually, and I think this is historical more than current, to be honest with you. I think it's like a relic, if you will, recommend that you use elder and eldest when you talk about people in the same family.
Mm-hmm.
Ross is elder than Kathy.
Oh.
Which sounds wrong to me. I'm sorry.
I would say Ross is older than Kathy.
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah. No question.
Kathy is better looking than Ross. No, sorry.
Ross is more intelligent than Kathy. I didn't even use the ER this time.
Wait, that seems really weird though. You would say that they want you to say elder than. I can hear like Ross is the elder child. But Ross is elder than Kathy. That seems even
extra
weird.
No, I would never
weird.
Say it. Yeah. Never.
It's very odd to me. Yeah.
No.
I think it's pretty much gone out. Like people don't, I mean, I don't even think people my age really say elder or eldest, and certainly not younger people.
No.
You still say the elderly though, don't you? You say
yes,
like,
yes,
the
absolutely.
The elderly,
the elderly
you do.
Well,
yeah. You don't say
the elderly.
The
elderly.
The elderly, no. But you wouldn't
you
even
say
the old. I wouldn't say the old. The old America needs to like take care of the old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like harsh, doesn't it? Oddly, for some, we go back to register again. Oddly enough, don't we?
But you would say elders. I mean, they mentioned at one point. If anyone reads Latin, Pliny the Elder is a famous, and Pliny the Younger, they're famous two Plinys, and they distinguish the two with elder one and the younger.
I always loved that as a kid. I did too. That sounds so cool. Yeah. Kathy the younger. No, I know. Sorry, go on.
But we do say elder statesman.
Yes.
You don't say older statesman.
Right.
And that goes back to, again, elderly has like a very formal connotation to me. The older doesn't.
You say respect your elders.
Yes.
You don't say respect the old people.
No.
These are kind of like fossilized phrases now, aren't they?
They are. I think so. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if Pliny were around now, he'd go, I'm Pliny the older. I don't know what he said. I'm the older Pliny. I don't know. Oh, I'm going to ask you one thing. Kathy, why don't you go on a little bit with old, the origin of old? Because that was interesting.
Oh, of the fact that they came from the same root, elder and old. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they came from Old English, eldra.
I think you mean Eld English.
Comparative form of, thank you. Which came from eld, old. That was elder, came from that. But old also came from eld, and it just got spelled differently because of the German influence.
Okay.
So you have two words, they basically just got, like, they just split in terms of spelling.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to throw to you two something I found out only yesterday.
Oh, crap, it's going to be hard.
This was the weirdest word origin I think I've ever seen. Can you name one instrument, like you're going to an orchestra, there's one instrument in that orchestra that is directly related with the word old?
Bassoon. No, I'm sorry.
That was well done, though. You said for a second, I thought, that's two, but it's close, not though, bassoon. Right?
It's the other double reed instrument. It's the old bow.
Oboe.
You both got it.
Yeah.
No, I was like following in his, I was cheating, going like, Fletcher's right. I just copied from his test paper.
I'm very impressed. It's, oboe is right. It comes from the old became out in French. So it became out bois, which is like
old wood.
Old wood. Yep.
Oh, wow. That's
you
super
did it,
cool.
Fletcher.
Huh.
I am so impressed.
Fletcher's smart.
Yeah.
He has an eld brain.
I have an
No, I mean, I had no idea that one. I had none.
Yeah. I would not have thought.
Well, let's move on and let's see if we can get Fletcher on
There's
something
a lot more
here.
We could do about old. I'm just looking at there's so much. Alderman.
Yeah.
Oh,
elder.
Oh, alderman comes from old too. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Which never occurred to me.
Yeah.
Old, actually, the original word comes from al, the word al, like that, which also relates to like alma mater, alumni, and all that. It's basically feeding something that then grows bigger and taller.
Whoa.
So that's how it came into.
Huh.
Now we're going to move on to something different completely, which are prefixes. Do they make this word the opposite, the same, or different in another way?
Mm.
Okay, this is sort of, I mean, we got, this basically relates to a long time ago. We talked, obviously, about flammable, inflammable.
Oh, yes. And which, how they mean the same thing.
Right. So we're going to go on here into false opposites, illusory antonyms, or same thing, or slightly different. And we're going to start with, I think Fletcher's going to know all of these, so we're going to discuss them more. And rather than have him, we're not going to quiz you on this to the same degree. So we have habitable and inhabitable.
Oh, right. In this case, it is opposite, right? You can live there or it's not conducive to life. Wait, you inhabit something, don't you? Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry. I had to talk through that one.
Yeah.
I was obviously thinking of uninhabitable.
Correct. Habitable and inhabitable are synonyms.
Yes, synonyms. They are.
Well said, Kathy. No, they're the same. Interestingly enough, though, a long time ago, inhabitable did mean not habitable.
Mm.
And then it changed.
Hmm. Interesting.
Which is the real problem with most languages. A lot of times you think things are going to be logical and they become human and capricious and, you know, people flip.
Yeah.
So in that sense, now they both basically mean the same thing.
And you used to have uninhabitable, which you don't have now. You have uninhabitable, but you used to have uninhabitable.
Huh.
Okay, next, valuable, invaluable. Synonyms or not?
They're not exactly the same. I don't want to say they're opposites either. They're just different. Valuable means it has value. Invaluable means you can't put a value on it, I guess. But that doesn't mean it doesn't have value. It means it.
Yeah.
Precisely. You got it.
The in there, in effect, is a not. But it's a not in the sense, like you just said it. It's so good that you can't value it.
Right.
So
Yeah, it's beyond value.
Yeah, although it used to, apparently, though, in some cases in the 1630s, I think, it also meant worthless, but that changed. it took out that thing of above value, too valuable for you to value.
What gets me with that, though, is invaluable. Would you say, I guess you'd have unvaluable, which you don't use, do you? You don't have such a word. Or is there one that's not used? Because you would argue that unvaluable then would be the thing that lacks value.
Yeah, no, we say things like worthless.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't say, but it used to be, apparently that was the case for a long time ago. I mean, in the 1600s, some people did use invaluable to mean not valuable. But you can't do it now.
Yeah, now you'd just say, like, that's not particularly valuable, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you don't say that's unvaluable.
There's not a word. Yeah. There's not a word exactly. Interesting.
No.
But you could, like, with expensive, you say inexpensive.
Yeah.
There the in works in that sense.
But do you say unexpensive? Is there an unexpensive as well? I mean, I would
not
think
that
there
I've
is
heard of.
Sloppily, but yeah. I mean.
I might actually look that was unexpensive ever a word. I don't.
Yeah, I don't think so, but. It would be so nice if it was just like in, on, you know, everything was
if
like
it actually,
the
yeah,
same.
They actually
they're
meant
saying
something.
It. They're saying it was apparently, well, there we go back to Orwell in that one. Unexpensive, ungood, you know, et cetera, unwarm, et cetera.
I have it as an archaic usage, 1800s.
Yeah, I have it as Webster's has 1828, unexpensive.
Yeah, okay, so it's like not anything.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was an invaluable. No, it was an unvaluable question.
But we are saying that Fletcher is something of a genius, or
is he ingenious?
Yes.
Yes. This is a trick one.
It's not the opposite. They just kind of mean different things, don't they?
Yeah.
Genius is brilliant, and ingenious is like super clever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you can see where they're related. You can see
how sure.
I guess the in there takes literally an in, not a not, but an in.
Mm.
You're in.
Ingenious?
You're getting the genius in. Uh-huh. I don't know. I guess it would be.
Well, they're from different. I mean, the roots, though, are different. Are they not? Yes, they are.
Oh, they are. The genius part of that is different?
It looks like it to me. Ross,
no,
I'm going to ask.
No, they're not. They're from the Latin to beget.
Ah, yes, I see. From the very big at the way back, it's from the root.
Yeah, the problem you get in with that is by the time it gets to
late, Latin, I got it from the pie. Excuse me, P-I-E.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You know me, I always go back to Latin. It's like
I know. Because
it goes earlier than Latin, too. But it's still, the word, though, still goes backwards. It's still the same root.
Yeah, but they split pretty early.
They split pretty early, but it's still to beget. You're begetting.
But they're spelled differently, too.
Catherine, they didn't spell in the Proto-Indo-European days.
Yes, they did. I, who was on the steps back then. I don't like talking about it. It was tough. Okay, next.
Next, is Kathy famous for that statement or infamous for that statement?
we must have talked about this relatively recently because I remember thinking about that scene from Three Amigos where they ask El Guapo is.
Yes.
They talk about how he's infamous. Infamous? Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
I haven't seen it in a while. Now I want to watch it.
So if you're famous, then you're well known, and that generally means a good thing. If you're infamous, then you are notorious, which I guess is bad now. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so funny, though. I never associate, and obviously they're related, and I don't think of it, infamous, with infamy. I never associate them.
Oh, yeah. Infamy.
Do you?
No, I don't.
Because I think of infamy as its own entity, you know?
That's so funny. And I think I can blame Three Amigos for me never thinking of that. I mean, because I saw that when I was a kid. And so that's probably my first exposure to the word infamous. And so I think I've always just thought in famous. I've never thought about infamy.
It's weird how it came, though, because it literally began meaning not famous.
Like not well known?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
The Latin basically is like famosus or fama would be like, would be report or repute. Mm-hmm. And so you're not really known, but then therefore you're not really known to have good repute, so therefore you're infamous in that sense, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. How it just sort of changed over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the fact that there's also the word fameless, which you never really see.
Oh, that's nice. I kind of like that.
It's like you're not, and you're not infamous. You're not famous. You're fameless. You're like the great, boring beige. You know.
Okay, this one is actually really interesting because this is one of my pet peeves. Although in a way it shouldn't be because they used to be switched around. But
we've talked about this.
And we've talked about this at length. And I think I probably go on and on about it because I, for some reason, it just really gets me. Disinterested and uninterested.
Oh, right. Right. Okay. Let me get this straight. Uninterested means I don't think it's interesting.
Right.
Disinterested is I don't have like a stake in either side.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
But it used to be the opposite.
Oh.
That's what drives me crazy.
I know. I feel like screaming about that.
Oh, that's nuts.
Yeah. Uninterested came about in the 1640s and it meant that you had no biases. Mm-hmm. It was just you were no vested interest. You didn't have a stake in it, if you
right.
will. And disinterested meant you didn't care. And now,
yeah,
which
like, why does this happen, Ross?
I don't know. And does this? I mean, I don't know. To the two of you, have this one really hits me. I really do not like it when I see the judge was uninterested in the case. I go, that's a bad judge.
Oh,
you know?
I'm the opposite of you. I have no problem with them being used interchangeably.
Oh, really?
What about you, Fletcher?
Wait. You have no problem with uninterested meaning disinterested?
Yeah.
Oh.
I do.
I don't really have a problem with disinterested meaning I don't really care about it. I have no because I'm so used to people saying disinterested.
Yeah.
Like I even kind of assume they mean I don't care.
Uninterested.
Right. But the other way, I could not handle that.
I couldn't either.
An uninterested judge does not mean a disinterested judge.
I don't want an uninterested judge when I'm going up for
trial. Okay, actually, you guys are right.
Okay.
I'm thinking it's the other way that I can handle it.
The other way
I'm picturing the judge right now. I'm picturing, like, SCOTUS. You know what I mean? And okay.
I want an interested judge.
Clicking his toenails and...
I backed off that. I'm sorry.
Well, so, just to keep on that, when you guys just hear somebody in conversation say disinterested, what do you assume they mean?
I assume they're using the word incorrectly in terms of the current definition, and they don't mean they're interested. Unless they're a judge, and the judge goes, I'm disinterested. I presume the judge is talking about he doesn't have a case, you know, he doesn't have a case for or against the prosecution. Talk to a judge. He says disinterested. I know what he means. Talk to, like, you know, a friend who goes, I'm disinterested in that. I think I know what he means.
Yeah, I think that kind of indicates that the word has changed a lot and it's just not going to mean unbiased very soon.
No.
I think you're right.
Although I'm fascinated by how old the flip was. Because, I mean, I'm reading right now from the OED, I think it's from the OED or it might be from something else, saying the modern sense of disinterested, meaning impartial, free from self-interest, is attested by the 1650s.
Well, so you know what happened? What happened was, you know, they used to be switched, and people were like, look, guys, whenever you say uninterested, I don't think impartial. I think you don't care. We got to switch these. And so everybody just switched them.
Switch them. Good thing. For all we know, it could be.
I like picturing, though, this little board of people sitting around with their little, like, okay, next. You know? We did disinterested, right?
Okay, the next word now is sort of interesting. This is not a prefix. This is a suffix. And this really sort of got us because I never really thought it. I instantly knew, and I'm sure Kathy instantly knew, and I'm sure you instantly know the difference. But we never thought about them. Caregiver versus caretaker.
Oh, wow.
And it's really interesting because they're also the giver and the taker, but they're kind of doing the same sort of thing, too.
Ross, I think we should let Fletcher weigh in before we discuss it.
No, but I want to weigh into the difference between the two words.
Well, So a caregiver is someone who's obviously taking care of another person. It's funny because I said taking care of.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Exactly, you said exactly what I wanted you to say. It's true. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. A caretaker is often taking care of like an estate or something like that, but not necessarily. I mean, a caretaker could be taking care of like another person. Maybe not necessarily one person, but a group of people or something. Like caretaker could mean people or animals or something. It doesn't necessarily mean an estate, at least when I hear it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I never really thought about it, but I instantly know, you know, oh, he's a caregiver to his elderly mother.
Oh,
elderly, I just said.
Oh, here's the thing. Okay, so like a caregiver is somebody who takes care of somebody who is maybe infirm or something like that. You could be the caretaker to four children, like, and you could be like their nanny. I mean, like, they do need your help, but they're not infirm and sickly or old and can't move, right?
Yeah, let's look at, I'm really taking a look at Merriam-Webster on this.
I'm looking at OED.
Caretaker, someone who gives physical or emotional care and support.
Mm-hmm. Sure, okay.
Okay, so that, Fletcher, and here's the line that Fletcher just said. He served as a caretaker to the younger children.
Yeah.
So you
caretaker? You meant caregiver. No,
no, caretaker.
No, caretaker.
Yeah, he takes care of them. He, you know, feeds them and clothes them, whatever. But caregiver is going to be somebody who needs help, like that, because of some kind of infirmity.
And here goes Merriam-Webster with Fletcher's definition. Caregiver, a person who provides direct care for children, elderly people, or the chronically ill. So we have very subtle definitions there.
Mm-hmm. I was fascinated that caregiver, the first thing in OED is 1966.
Didn't we just kind of dump people off to the side before that?
I have caretaker from 1858.
Yeah.
So-and-so acted as a nurse and caretaker. Caregiver is much more recent. I mean, the 20th century. That's pretty recent.
Caregiver sounds recent to me.
Yeah, it does. I agree.
Yeah, it sort of smacks of sociological and psychological textbooks, doesn't it? I must say, though, when I look at both of them, it's so funny. In my head, to me, I would have thought the difference was caregiver, people, caretaker, house.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, too, just how we instantly, which is the problem, you never really know another language unless you lived in the language. I mean, that's really hard to explain. I think that if someone is learning English, that's a really hard thing to instant. You're not going to.
Yeah, I think that you just avoid the topic.
Yeah.
Okay, this is another email. This is Pat in San Francisco.
Hi, Pat.
Said, there's something that I've long wondered about, so thought you two, I'm sorry, Fletcher, just us two.
That's reasonable.
Were the people to ask. Why do we say beloved, as in dearly beloved, we are gathered here? Most other words with an ED ending don't have the ED as a separate syllable. Mm-hmm. I'm confused.
Okay, and to relieve your confusedness, it's not really that confusing. The key thing really is that the ED used to be pronounced in Old English. So everything was ed. Confused, as Kathy just said, you would say confused. Mm-hmm. It's the past participle. The ED form would have that sound. Then the sound got lost. But we've talked a lot about fossilized words, and we have sayings or whatever that still retain that sound because people got used to saying the whole phrase. Blessed are they, the aged people. Mm-hmm. He is learned. Those kept the ED sound basically just by the capriciousness of English or because people were basically using them in like, in a phrase. Mm-hmm. Blessed are they or whatever. Dearly beloved.
I want to just interject. Also, I think we go back to register. We've got to talk about register royals because it keeps coming up.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, learned. It's just, it sounds like smart. Don't you think? I mean, I know that sounds silly.
Oh, it does. I agree.
Saying, like, he's a very learned individual. You would never say he's a learned individual.
No.
You know?
No.
That, I mean, it, which is odd because you're saying the same thing.
You would, but you would not say it. We would say Fletcher is learned. Ross and Kathy are learned. Okay.
This is the final frontier. This is because, actually, recently, was it you or me? I don't remember, Ross, but one of us asked the other about a that which situation.
Yeah, this is sort of a bugbear for Kathy and me because a lot of times we have editors doing our witches and thats, and Kathy and I always have to stop and I don't know, it's like it's been years of doing this, and every time there'll be a commenter going, no, it's witch, or they'll cross out witch and put that or whatever. And we always have to do like, what's going on? We cannot get
it.
It's
true.
You ever learn a language and there's like that one word that everyone like, it's it kind of pops up and you look in the dictionary like 48 times, you still don't remember the word.
Right.
It's the same thing for which and that. We cannot get it in our heads.
Well, I don't know about you, Ross, but what I do is just put whichever like seems appropriate at the moment. I don't really care anymore. I figure like they'll catch it.
I do the same thing with that ever.
That ever. So the deal here, in case people haven't heard us talk about it before, is that when you're writing the sentence, you can write something like the dog that caught the car, or you can write the dog which caught the car. And people use them interchangeably often or don't know which one
Why?
To use.
Yeah.
So we're going to give you a quick mini quiz, Fletcher, and see if you're better than we are.
Can you remember the rule?
Yes.
Mostly I can.
Okay.
And I'm not sure I can remember the terms that go with the rule, but I can try to explain it here.
Okay. I sent you three sets of two sentences.
Okay. So the first sentence here, it says, the computer which is on my desk is broken.
Is that correct or not?
Okay. So the way it's written, and this often helps me, the way it's written, there are no commas in that sentence. The computer which is on my desk is broken. So I think what you're saying is, of all the computers in this room, and there are many, the one particularly on my desk is the one that's broken. So
okay.
you wouldn't say which in this case. You would want to say that because you're pointing to that particular computer.
Perfect.
Very good.
Very
Fletch.
Good. We'll tell you the name of the rule now in a minute, but go next one now.
The next one, the computer, comma, which I turned on earlier today, comma, is broken. In this case, there's only one computer we're really talking about, and it's broken. And also, I happened to turn it on earlier today, but that's not exactly important to this.
Perfect.
Very good. We have taught you well, Padawan.
Okay, now you may have known this before, Kathy. We're the dummy. I think we're the ones.
Really? We need this quiz, Ross.
Yeah. I mean, we know it theoretically, but we always blow it for some reason.
So the deal is you're using that when the information that follows is important to understanding which one you're talking about, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you're using which when there's extra information, but if you take it out, you still know the thing you're talking about.
Right. It's called a restrictive clause.
Okay.
And it's restricting, like with the computer that is on my desk is broken. The clause is, which is that little bit of a, you know, like a fake, a halfy sentence is on my desk, is integral to the whole thing. It has to be there. It's restrictive.
Mm-hmm. That has to be the one that's on my desk. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a restrictive clause. Restrictive clause. They take that.
And so it's unrestrictive. Unrestrictive, is that what it's called? When
unrestricted, yeah. Okay.
When you're talking about which. So like, let's just take that first sentence. The computer which is on my desk is broken. In this case, there's only one computer to talk about because we're using the word which. And it's not that mm-hmm. important that it's on my desk, because if you walk into the room, you're only going to see one computer.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'd said the computer that is on my desk is broken, that means when you walk into the room, there might be multiple computers, but you need to go to the one on my desk. So it restricts it to the one that's on my desk, right?
The computer that is broken.
The computer that is on my desk is broken. But if I said the computer which is on my desk is broken, let's say there are commas. The computer, comma, which is on my desk, comma,
right.
is broken. Then it's not so important that it's on my desk. I mean, you're just not really
right.
You're not
exactly.
going to have another computer.
Exactly.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
You got it.
I want to do the Apple one.
Okay, let's do the Apple
one. Let's do the
Apple.
Okay. Apples that are red go in the basket. So we probably got some green apples here and some red apples here and who knows what other kind of apples here, but the ones that are red go in the basket.
Right.
Right.
The second sentence, apples, comma, which are red, comma, go in the basket. I mean, not necessarily a true statement if we're just talking about apples in general, because they're not all mm-hmm. red, but regardless.
We're talking about red delicious apples, okay?
But basically we're saying put the apples in the basket. The apples go in the basket.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Oh, and did you know apples are red?
Yeah. And then, I mean, there's another way of saying this is essential clauses. I should have added that too.
Essential.
That is essential. Uh-huh. That means I think that's a better way to say it. That's essential
that
to
helps.
The
yeah.
to discussion.
I think that's better than restrictive and non-restrictive, frankly.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that's way more helpful, and I don't think I've ever heard that before. That's really helpful to understanding what you're doing here.
Yeah.
It's so odd, though, that, I mean, to this day, Ross and I both know our language, obviously. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here talking with you. But I sit there and I can't help it. Automatically, I go, that witch. I do.
My problem is that when we write, I think Kathy does the same, we both do the same thing. There's a flow in one's writing. And sometimes, regardless if it's essential or inessential, which sounds better to me, just how it flows.
Which
the
usually
sentence.
Sounds better than that all the time.
I agree with you. That to me, Kathina, you got it right. That I don't
true.
Like. I don't like that as much as I like which. I like
that
which.
Stops you, to me at least, I would argue. I mean, that is a sort of like, bleh. You know what I mean? Whereas which is what, ooh.
Well, it is. I mean, it is much more mellifluous. Which, wish, wish. You know?
Ooh.
Like, yeah.
That's a like, ooh.
That is harsh.
That is like,
yeah.
Yeah, that.
I know.
No, which? Which one? That one. You know?
Yeah.
I mean.
This feels like an Abbott and Costello routine. Right?
That's on first.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.